roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. It is April 5th. And we got to go through our formal intro, as last week we just lost it because our good friend and colleague, former colleague Simon Head was with us. And I felt like we were just three boys shooting the shit, the proverbial shit. But no, it was a proper show. And but back at it today here, give you a quick intro. Can't even tell you that there was a UFC this past weekend because there wasn't. And it's rare that we say that. They've been on a roll. Been answering a lot of questions about that too, man. And I, you know, the UFC kept us busy during the pandemic, and I told people I wanted to make sure I keep mentioning that as much crap as they got, they were leading the charge in the sports world. So, and it's, you know, transferred over. So anyway, this weekend was off for them, but Bellator got started on Showtime, and on Wednesday, ONE Championship takes off on TNT later this month. PFL on ESPN2. Big time here. Big moments for the sport of mixed martial arts. You know, the UFC's got fans coming back. We'll talk about that. And they're also going to be on ABC as well. So can you believe what I just said? I mean, ESPN2. Of course, we know about the fights on ESPN, ABC, Showtime, TNT. That's pretty amazing, folks. We're going to cover the latest news as well. There's been some fight bookings, some really, really good ones. There's fighters calling each other out. So, you know, we're never going to get away from the drama itself. And, of course, we'll go over the main event, especially, of that Bellator card. We got to give some respect, man, to Pitbull Frady. He really is one of the top fighters in the world. And unless media outlets like us and personalities like Goz and I continue to push that forward, maybe people will start to embrace him a little bit more. He really is one of the pound for pound best in the whole sport of mixed martial arts. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, April 5th. Also, how could I forget Randy Costa, UFC bantamweight, joined us as well. Forgot to mention him. That's because I'm kind of looking up now versus looking down or parallel. I got this new stand for my laptop, so it's supposed to be a more flattering downward angle. Though, I got to tell you, I've either gained some weight or something happened, but I look like shit. I might just have to go with George. I'm losing the gorgeous part. Goz, how was your weekend?
It was good. It was all right. What about yours? How was your Easter?
It was cool. It was with mom and dad, and mom made some soup. I don't have soup too often, but it was good. I had seconds. And, yeah, we just kind of, you know, hung back at home. Even though things have opened up, I didn't feel like it was right to even look into brunches or anything like that. Because I'm still a little uneasy, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm still migrating back into the real world, and they're obviously 25 years older than I am, so I can only imagine what the uneasiness they may feel. But we were basically at home and watched a little bit of hoops Sunday night, some soccer in the morning, and then just spend time together. I had to catch up on a lot of stuff. I had to turn in my Bellator rankings. I had to do the rankings for USA Today. So I was working for most of it. How about you? I saw that you did some – what was that, tri-tip or something like that?
No, we did some flank steak with some chimichurri sauce on top and some mashed potatoes and caramelized carrots and then that little Brazilian bread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that nice touch there with the Brazilian bread. I keep forgetting. Is that the one that's available at Trader Joe's?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. Well, there's no UFC to go over. It's rare that that happens nowadays. And then they're going to be back this weekend with Vettori versus Holland. But let's talk about Bellator on Showtime. Bellator 255 with Patricio Pitbull Frady defending his featherweight title while simultaneously advancing in the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix. So this was also a semifinal matchup versus Emmanuel Sanchez. It was also a rematch versus Emmanuel Sanchez. He's beaten Emmanuel Sanchez in the past. He submitted him this time, and he retains his belt, so it counts as a proper title defense, and he advances to now face AJ McKee. And I'm going to tell you something. Grand Prix don't play out like that. Bellator's got to be tickled to death that they get their champ versus undefeated AJ McKee. That may wind up being one of the biggest fights they've ever promoted by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah, when Scott Coker brought up that tournament, there had to have been a couple people in the room that went, ooh, but what if we miss out on that fight? So you're right. He's probably got a big smile on his face right now that it actually played out this way. And then how about the buildup that they gave it? You know, like having AJ McKee on the desk for the entire card and then having him go into the cage at the end and have a stare down. Man, I love Big John McCarthy, and I know he's got to address what's going on, but I was dying to hear what they were saying to each other, and you caught like the tail end of it. And it was basically AJ McKee telling him, hey man, you've lost, you know, like I haven't lost. And Pitbull had a nice line for him. He said, you know, that's what, that loss is what kind of makes you into the person you are, and it's going to happen to you too. And they were kind of going back and forth. It got me hyped. It's the best fight that can happen right now in Bellator.
I would agree. He has lost. He's lost four times, but I know one of them was Pat Curran, who was a formidable featherweight. I know one of them was Daniel Strauss, who he had a trilogy with, and he won the trilogy. So he beat Strauss twice, and he lost to Daniel Strauss. And Strauss was also a former champion at Bellator. I know one of them was Benson Henderson, one of the greatest lightweights ever. So his losses have been pretty much to good fighters, really, really good fighters, top-notch fighters. But yeah, what that guy's been able to do across two different weight classes, though, as I say that, he hasn't really done anything at lightweight other than capture the title, but no title defenses. But this Grand Prix has been keeping him busy. You got to stay healthy for the Grand Prix because there's a $1 million prize, you know? So I'd like to see him at some point after McKee just dedicate a whole year to lightweight, or tell us now. I mean, like I've always said this before, the accomplishment isn't so much. I mean, it is when you start splitting hairs and talking about greatest of all times and things like that. You bring up title defenses and, you know, all the finer details of somebody's resume. But for right now, to hold up a division like that, I mean, he beat Chandler. He's going on 2 years since he beat him. And so to really just, I mean, that belt could be out there flourishing in the hands of somebody else, I suppose. I mean, maybe because of the pandemic, they didn't worry about it so much. But you know, sign a few free agents and have a four-man, you know, tournament or an eight-man Grand Prix, whatever you call it. I notice I said tournament for four. You can't call four men a Grand Prix. A Grand Prix's got to be at least eight or more. But still, the accomplishment's there. He beat Chandler. I think now he has like five or six title defenses. And he's beaten great competition, you know. And then AJ McKee, of course, has looked outstanding along the way. Makes it look so easy. I can't wait for the fight. It's too early to make a prediction, but it's going to be the biggest Bellator fight ever, honestly.
Yeah, it could very well be. The lightweight division, though, I mean, just across mixed martial arts has so many killers, so much talent in it that, yeah, it should be kind of flourishing more in Bellator, but it just isn't. You look at, for the longest time, we were saying they need to sign someone. They need to sign someone. They don't even need to go after some of the top dogs, just bring in some people to make Michael Chandler happy at that time. They brought in Benson Henderson, and that didn't really work out. But, you know, you saw what PFL was able to do, and then Anthony Pettis, that was a big one. I think maybe you're right. Some of it did have to go with the pandemic and what was going on. I think they just kind of put everything on hold that wasn't really popping at the moment. But I'm hoping at the end of this Grand Prix that they'll give that division a little bit more attention because it really needs it. I mean, every organization, that should be your marquee division, 155, because there's so many heads and so many possible matchups. The way they fight, they're not small enough where you're not going to lack some knockouts. They're big enough where you're going to see knockouts, but they're just small enough to get that the agileness out of them, you know, and they're all over the cage. They're very well-rounded. So it's a great division. It needs to flourish more in Bellator, though.
Yeah. You know, for a while, WSOF, World Series of Fighting, before they became PFL, they had Justin Gaethje there at the top, right? And mm-hmm. Gaethje kind of carried that division, but also, in a way, he kind of carried the promotion, you know, dare I say. And he found himself a willing dance partner in Luis Palomino, and they had some classics. You could still keep your promotion, you know, alive and thriving, you know, your division, I should say, alive and thriving while they continue to stock the shelves a little bit and bring in some other talent. If you find the right guys, the right ingredients, for a top promotion like Bellator to not have much going on at lightweight, you know, that's just a huge sin, especially when you had the Eddie Alvarez to Michael Chandler transfer. And I know that along the way they had, you know, Brent Primus and now Pitbull Frady, but you still had plenty of opportunity to like bring in some of that talent, you know, from other promotions, you know, like free agents or I guess homegrown. I mean, 155, come on. Seriously, mm-hmm. 155 is deep anywhere. And I mean, on Wednesday, Tim Nasty is going to fight Eddie Alvarez. You know, and one championship can honestly say these are two great lightweights, and the winner could get a shot at our champion, Christian Lee. Right now, Bellator can't say too much about the lightweight division, and that's just – it shouldn't be that way. Something should be going on with lightweight. I don't know what they can do at this point. I think they're all in with Frady because he's really one of their biggest stars, and I don't think they're just going to take it away from him now, you know. It'd be like, you know, when you're watching basketball and you have to foul somebody and you're like, foul him, you know, the 24-second clock, and you foul him with 1 second left. At that point, you've already played 23 seconds of defense. Make him take the shot.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. But what'd you think of the overall product that they had on Showtime? I thought from the get-go, the little vignette that they had, I thought was legit. I thought it was cool to hear Mauro Ranallo's voice. I thought they did pretty well. The only thing that to me just wasn't popping, I always forget her name, but she was the host, Jen. I can't remember what her last name is. She was good, but she just wasn't popping with like that energy that I think you would need to drive home that first card back. But other than that, I thought everything was
right.
I think so. It just wasn't popping that way. But I love that they put AJ McKee on there. You know, obviously Big John and Josh Thompson, they're always going to pop. They're always going to do their thing. Mauro is unstoppable. And the fights were pretty good. The ladies came to fight. The grappling in that was a lot of fun to watch. I liked it overall. I thought it was a great card.
Yeah. I'm just happy they're back on Showtime. I feel like Strikeforce did something pretty special during their time with Showtime. And then Showtime, obviously huge in the boxing world at one point. Now, you know, getting back in it, I think that's just a nice destination for combat sports fans to go back and forth. So, yeah, happy to see that. Happy to see Mauro Ranallo back in action. And I guess we got to address Mike Goldberg's no longer with the promotion. When pushed a little bit more, Scott Coker said, hey, look, that was more of a call from the production side. And he also made it sound like it may not be the last time, because if Mauro's forced to cover boxing, then maybe that's just an option, you know. But Mike Goldberg is not their number one play-by-play guy going forward. It'll be Mauro Ranallo, which, again, no disrespect to Mike Goldberg, but everybody knows how we feel about Mauro Ranallo.
Yeah, Mauro Ranallo is awesome. Mike Goldberg, I am just curious to see where he would land. You know, one thing that kind of caught me by surprise was seeing Jimmy Smith. He landed at WWE. So, I mean, I guess there's just options for everyone. But if you look at the landscape of the major organizations right now, they all kind of seem to have their guy. And Mike Goldberg, I think, didn't he call like college football at one point or hockey or something like that?
Hockey. Hockey's a sport, yeah. He may have called college football, but I know hockey's a sport.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, that maybe that's something. But like you alluded to earlier, there's just going to be times where Mauro Ranallo is tied up and you gotta find someone else to fill in, and he's a perfect guy to do it.
For Father's Day goes, it's official. I think you and I need to come over here and clean up Dad's garage a little.
Yeah.
I don't like my background right now. The only place I can actually stream is in the garage. The router's inside the house, but the strongest signal's in the garage. That's why I'm not there. Yeah.
I think we might have to get booster shots before we attempt to do that, right?
Yeah, he's a little messy in here. All right. So let me go through the rest of the card. Let me give the results. And then, of course, anything you'd like to chime in on, just let me know. Bellator 255 took place on Showtime, and it was a free presentation on Showtime. Hopefully that's a motivator for people to pick up the premium channel. Jason Jackson defeated Neiman Gracie in the co-main event. So we had 15 minutes of action there. That was a unanimous decision. Terrell Fortune defeated Jack May. They still hate each other. Stopped him in the first round early, just like Pitbull Frady. He stopped his fight in the first round as well. Usman Nurmagomedov defeated Mike Hamill. Kana Watanabe defeated Alejandro Lara by split decision. Magomedov defeated C.J. Hamilton, rear naked choke, second round there. Mandel Nalo defeated Ricardo Seixas. Khalid Mirzaliyev defeated Fabio Aguilar. Chris Gonzalez defeated Roger Huerta. Jose Augusto Azevedo defeated Jonathan Wilson. And there you have it. That's Bellator 255. Out of all said and done on Showtime. And like you said, Gavs, you know, I give them about an 8.5 for Saturday's presentation. They need to show up a few things, but overall, I liked it.
Maybe I was a little surprised. So that Neiman Gracie fight, Neiman had moments where he got the fight exactly where he needed it to be. You know, everything had worked in that game plan. He just wasn't able to finish. And I was just thinking about how long of a road it's been. Like, do you remember back in the day, if a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, let alone a Gracie, gets you down like that, takes your back, that's it, man. It's curtains. You might as well get up and start walking towards the restroom. He's one of the Gracies that kind of has evolved and tried to put some striking together, put the total package. But in that fight, I know he said it just didn't feel like a representation of himself, but he had moments where he could have been successful. He got that fight where he needed it. He took his back. He just wasn't able to pull it off, man. That just happens. But it's just crazy where the sport is at today now.
I got a question in the chat room here. It says, hey, was that Bigfoot Silva that just walked behind you, George? No, that's actually my dad. This is his garage. I'm here in Paris, California, broadcasting from here. But no, it was not Bigfoot Silva. But I understand the resemblance.
I thought you were filming a Jack Lynx commercial or something.
What's that?
I thought you were recording a Jack Lynx commercial or something. I thought that was Sasquatch. You're going to mess with him.
He's pretending like he can't hear, but I think he heard it. All right. Let's go over. What time is Randy Costa goes?
I think he's at 9:30, right? Let me double check. He actually just texted me. He is.
So let's talk about some of the big news that's out there. I got a bunch of it. And depending on how hardcore you're at, don't give me any attitude about like, oh, duh, haven't you heard? But it looks like Poirier signing, actually, that made it official. Usually you would think McGregor's the holdup because he's the one negotiating that extra zero, you know, on his paycheck. But when I read the article on Junkie, it said, oh, yeah, McGregor was already set. And you can never tell within being talked about, rumored, everything points to that direction. You know, you hear these different little token phrases out there. But it looks like officially now Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor, UFC 262. Not for a title or anything. The only thing they get to settle is their trilogy. Thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, this is something that we're going to be talking about later in a segment that we're going to do on the spinning backflips. I'll give you a little preview, but when you think about it, it doesn't feel like a trilogy to me. Each fight seems so different. Each guy's coming from a different place in each of these fights. So you have to remember, now it's going to be Conor McGregor that's fighting with that chip on his shoulder. Remember for how long Dustin Poirier talked about how much that loss bothered him? You could tell right away with Conor McGregor, that's one of those situations. And this is the one time where you have a fighter that could probably has a good chance of besting Conor McGregor, and Conor McGregor can't say anything, you know, because he'd be up 2-1 on the guy. It's not like they're going to fight a fourth time. There's going to be fans now, and that's a little bit of a different situation. Remember last time we saw Conor McGregor, that was like a subdued Conor McGregor. That was a very quiet Conor McGregor, respectful Conor McGregor. I think the gangster in him is going to come out, and I think part of that is just that Irish contingent behind him hearing fans cheer. I think that brings out a different level in the kid, and I think these are just three very separate fights. I'm excited to see it. It just bothers me that I wanted to see Dustin Poirier in a proper title fight.
Me too. And imagine getting in a proper title fight and your first title defense being Conor McGregor. You know, I think it would be even bigger. The longer you let it marinate, the more I think you want it. Now, that said, how long have we been saying McGregor versus Diaz part three? We'll take that at any moment. And I guess maybe I do lose interest by the day on that. Though if you tell me it was going to happen, I think I'd be excited. I don't know, man. But I just think so much more comes with being the champ that, and we've said this till we're blue in the face, I feel like Poirier misplayed his hand. I think he may not have gotten as big of a payday now for fighting Oliveira or Chandler or whoever, but I think everything that came after that, if he became world champion, would be tremendous, including that third fight with Conor McGregor. I mean, Nate Diaz wanted a piece of Poirier as well. Poirier could probably get him to come down to 155, so I think there'd be a lot of fights for that for him there as champion, but That's out the window. We now have Charles Oliveira versus Michael Chandler for the vacant undisputed title left behind by Khabib Nurmagomedov, and these two are just going to do this grudge match, I guess, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. This is we had a story up on this a little bit with Scott Coker talking that Michael Chandler is going to kind of represent Bellator in this type of fight. And I was going at it with people on Twitter a little bit back and forth because there were just so many different opinions. But how do you feel? Do you feel like Michael Chandler's going in there representing Bellator? Is it fair to say that? How many fights does he have to have before we would shake that label off of him? The closest thing we have to that situation is probably like Eddie Alvarez coming over and doing that. Justin Gaethje coming over and doing that. This is a little bit quicker, I think, as far as title fights go. The other two didn't get them as quickly as Michael Chandler has. But what do you think? Is that a fair assessment? Is that UFC versus Bellator?
Yeah, I heard a lot of the Strikeforce guys, like Luke Rockhold and Tyrone Woodley and Daniel Cormier, some of those, all of them, I can't remember. But they would say they felt like they had a chip on their shoulder when they were with Strikeforce. And by coming over, they were going to prove that there was good talent outside the UFC. So, yeah, I mean, Chandler may not say it. It could be that he turned the page and now he's just a member of the UFC. You know, Chandler's a little bit more proper and he kind of likes to make sure that he just stays out of like those controversial statements that can be thrown around. Luckily, Coker said it. Chandler didn't have to say it. But Chandler was a three-time champion with them. He had title defenses. He had about a decade with those guys. So to say he's anything but a Bellator guy after only having one fight in the UFC, then, you know, that would be ridiculous. He's a Bellator guy. Does he feel like he's representing Bellator? I don't know. We'll have to ask him. But I don't think Coker's wrong in saying it.
You know, when you think about it, that's an opportunity, if Michael Chandler were to win that fight, for Bellator to say, hey, we got the best lightweight in the world. And arguably, whoever comes out of Pitbull and AJ McKee, he could almost say that could possibly be one of, if not the best, featherweight in the world as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Pitbull Frady might say, I'm actually the best featherweight and lightweight in the world because of that win he holds over Michael Chandler that he continues to bring up.
That's very true.
Yeah. So it could be big, big year for Pitbull Frady. And just so everybody knows, I know we've thrown a lot at you guys the last few weeks. So let's reset here. UFC 261 is going to take place later this month. It's April 24th, and that has Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal, Valentina Shevchenko versus Jessica Andrade, Zhang Weili versus Rose Namajunas, Chris Weidman versus Uriah Hall, and Anthony Smith versus Jim Crute. Now, 1 month later, May 15th, Oliveira versus Chandler. That's the title fight there for the vacant title. Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz, Jacare versus Andre Muniz, Tony Ferguson versus Beneil Dariush, Jack Hermanson versus Edmund Shahbazyan, Matt Schnell versus Alex Perez. That's a pretty deep card as well. Hopefully I didn't leave anybody out. I mean, I'm sure I did, but I'm talking about trying to touch on most of the ranked fighters. Alex Perez versus Matt Schnell. I just said that. That's right. Okay. So good fights there. And then UFC 263, that's on June 12th. That one's shaping up with Davison Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno, Joanne Calderwood versus Lauren Murphy, Damian Maya versus Bilal Muhammad. That just got signed, though. So you heard me say Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz. Bilal Muhammad now has an opponent. And UFC 264 in July, that's with Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor, Jessica Eye versus Jennifer Maya, Ryan Hall versus Aliyah Topuria, Omari Akhmedov versus Brad Tavares, Stephen Thompson versus Gilbert Burns. The UFC signed some good fights because they're keeping their roster active now.
Yeah. Now, I wonder, you know what's interesting to me is just the stars that are kind of back in the limelight here. I think it's really interesting that a lot of those people are back. It's very cool to see Damian Maya finally come back into the fold and get his little retirement fight, but get it in front of fans. That's something that we said was kind of important for somebody that's given that many fights to the UFC. And to me, Bilal Muhammad is like the perfect the perfect opponent for something like that. Hey, Dad understands that there's a camera and that he's on it, right?
Yeah, but he asked me, he goes, is it okay if I hang out back? And I go, yeah, more than likely I'll block it. I'll block him. If I sit here, I completely block him.
All right. You look like Shiva. There's like an arm coming out of you.
Oh, your arms, Dad. You look like a squid. See that?
Yeah.
He says, I got the Great Wall of China blocking me. So I deserve that jab after the Bigfoot jab. All right, look. Here's a few other matchups goes, too. I want to say one thing, but that's putting pressure on John Jones. If they're coming to terms with a lot of these guys, where's John Jones? Where's Colby Covington? Some of these guys that are kind of holding out. Colby's trying to say, I'm the backup for Masvidal and Usman. Hey, look, if you can pull that off with 3 weeks to go and you get a payday out of it and all you had to do was make weight and just cause a stir and you're for sure next, then do it, Colby. You know what I mean? I think the move will pay off. But if the UFC and you are brawling right now because you're not taking a fight, I wouldn't put it past the UFC to look at Edwards, you know, if he wins. And don't forget that if Masvidal wins, that would be a trilogy that might need to be settled. Mm-hmm. The UFC is so unpredictable. Sometimes somebody will lose, like Whitaker, and then they'll go fight, go get a couple fights, kid, and then we'll talk about you fighting Izzy again. Jose Aldo, you were a champ for like a decade, but go get some fights before you can fight Conor again. And then you got other fights where somebody loses and they're like, oh, we got to make that happen again. We just got to do it. We got to do it. You know what I mean? And so they're very, very unpredictable. And you just never know. If Masvidal were to beat Usman, they may want to run that one back right away. And if not, then maybe Colby slips in. But I didn't mind his strategy of maybe just being the backup.
Yeah, no. I think anytime a fighter can do that, go for it, man. I mean, you're only honing in on your craft. You're making yourself better. And at the same time, you're grabbing a paycheck to do it. I mean, that to me is awesome.
A couple other quick matchups. The Korean Zombie and Dan Ige, they're going to headline a fight night. Marvin Vettori is now facing Kevin Holland. Darren Till is out, as you all know. Holland got very lucky to get get put in a spot like that. But because he's a frequent fighter, he went 5-0 in 2020. I think they forgave him for that dud that he had about a week ago. Cyril Gane versus Alexander Volkov. We'll hold off on that one because I think we can tie that into John Jones, Francis Ngannou, Derek Lewis, and the rest. Our guest is ready to go. His name is Randy Costa. He's a UFC bantamweight, 6-1 overall, 2-1 in the UFC. We'll talk to him. Be right back, Junkie Nation. All right, we're back. And joining us now on the hotline is Randy Costa. How's it going, Randy?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good, and you?
Good, man. No complaints.
Where are you at now?
I'm in Florida. Sunny South Florida.
Sunny South Florida. All right.
South Florida.
You were going to fight on the Adesanya Blachowicz card, but there was an injury. Can you update us on that first?
All good, man. Just a small bump in the road. I did 4 weeks of PT, and we were back in it. So, thankfully caught it early enough that it wasn't anything too serious. Sucks we had to pull out, but on to the next.
Is it a type of injury you can disclose, or you wouldn't want the opponent to know, the future opponent?
I don't really give a fuck. It was a back injury. I thought I, like, really fucked up my disc. Thankfully, not a disc issue, and we were able to just get things worked out with some PT.
Was it random, like when Daniel Cormier sneezed the wrong way and threw out his back, or is it something that's been building up?
Thankfully, age is on my side, so I didn't do it with a sneeze. But I had, like, some lingering things over time. I heard it in the beginning of camp. Gave it, like, 2-3 weeks off, and it kind of fixed itself on its own. And then 2 weeks later, I heard it again. And at that point, we were 2 weeks off from the fight. So there was really no chance of being able to have it cleared in that time. I couldn't practice. I couldn't bend over. I couldn't cough. Couldn't sneeze. I couldn't really do any day-to-day activities without pretty shitty pain. I was always one of those guys that were like, oh, it's a back injury. It's not really a big deal. But, dude, like, now that I felt a back injury, I give a lot of sympathy to the guys, and I have a lot of understanding for, you know, the why people pull out with back injuries. That shit is no joke.
So at this point in time, if anybody needs help moving this weekend, don't call Randy Costa.
Yeah, don't call me for any of your moving stuff right now. Yeah, definitely don't do that.
George, I got to give him a touch of gloves. I got to give him a touch of gloves on that back thing. So as a kid growing up, a big football fan, you would hear some of these football players and they'd go, "We're out. I'm out for this game. I got back spasms." And I go, "Back spasms? Come on, man. Just stretch out. Get out there." It wasn't until about 4 years ago that I actually got one. It's the only time anything has ever happened to my back. Bro, I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't laugh. It only lasted about a couple hours. But I could not believe how bad, how much pain it was, how you couldn't do anything. It was. I'll never make fun of that. I still kind of, turf toe is like an ingrown toenail. I've never gotten that, but that was another one I'd laugh at. Like, come on, man, just tape up that toe and get out there.
The turf toe is definitely a bitch, but with the back stuff, I was like, you know, just rub some dirt on it. You'll be all right, kid. You'll be all right. Dude, like, that stuff's really not a fucking joke. That hurts.
Wait till you guys get a bruised heel. That's one I used to laugh at. I was like, a bruised heel? Come on, man. I've been bruised all over. But, yeah, you step the wrong way and you get a bruised heel and you're out for possibly 2 months. You just got to, like, not do anything, and then it slowly recovers. All right, the good thing is you're back and ready to go. You're the opponent that you were going to face that night, Trevin Jones. He went ahead and fought. He won. Would you just like to run it back with him, or are you looking at other names? What's been thrown your way? When do you think we could see you again?
I don't particularly care who it is. I'm sure you guys see all the stuff with going back and forth on Twitter with Adrian Yanez. I don't dislike Adrian Yanez at all. In fact, it's the complete opposite. I started following him and what he was doing right after his contender fight. I like him, dude. He's like me in the regard that, you know, we're not really here to talk shit. We're just, you know, trying to engage and talk with people and be friendly, and then we can go out there and get into a fight. I would like to fight Adrian Yanez, and Adrian Yanez has expressed he would like to fight me. I think that fight is a lot of fucking fun. I'm a huge fan of his style and what he brings, and I think we could put on a sick show together. We're campaigning to get on the UFC Houston card. As a realist, I probably realize that that fight's probably not going to happen on that night. But maybe shortly thereafter we can get it done. But we'll see, dude. I think that fight is a lot of fun. I think if we can put it on like a main event prelim type deal, or open it up for pay-per-view or something like that, I think we could really get things going. I think that's a really exciting fight. We both have head kick knockouts. We both have right hand knockouts. It's very clear what we're trying to do. I think it's a fun fight, dude. As far as Trevin looked fucking awesome in that fight, dude. Mario Bautista's not a joke. That was a great performance by Trevin Jones. I don't have any like preference whether I fight him or not. It doesn't really matter. I know we put on a big fight. I was happy for him, dude. It was nice to see that one, he got a replacement opponent, he was able to compete that night, and two, he went out and kind of showed people that, you know, that first one wasn't fluky, that guy can actually fight. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm ready for whenever, dude. I can make weight on like a week and a half, 2 weeks notice, something like that. But I think a fight with Yanez is really fun, dude. And we have some people get behind him. So we'll see. We'll see if I can just keep talking shit on Twitter and he can keep talking shit on Twitter. I want to fight the Dr. Pepper guy. We'll see what we can do.
There you go. So I did want to say one thing, though. I liked that you gave us a point of direction in that you said, I'd like to be the main event on the prelims, like of a pay-per-view. So you're saying you think you and Yanez can have a firecracker fight where somebody at the end goes, oh, I got to get the pay-per-view. These guys just put me in the mood. They just sold me the pay-per-view because they brought it. Is that what you're saying? Like, you think you could be the hook?
That's 100% what I'm saying. You're not seeing me going out there and cuddling guys against the cage for 15 minutes. You're definitely not seeing Adrian doing that either. We're going out there and we're just tossing limbs with no regard of safety, and hopefully something lands. I think that could really, you know, that could we could have a good spot on a fight card and really get fans entertained and in tune. We were campaigning so hard for that Houston card because, one, I know he's from Houston, whatever. And I was gifted the opportunity to fight in my hometown arena. So if I can help him out by, you know, let's go put on a fight. I will try to knock him out in his hometown for sure. But it would be cool to see him get his shot in his hometown. That'd be really cool. Number one. And number two, it has fans. I think a fight that, you know, that him and I could put on, in the fireworks that we'd bring, in the styles that we match and how we match up against each other, I think it's a no-brainer to put it in front of a crowd. I think we could really set off and kick off a night. I'm not asking to have like this main card spot or any of that crazy stuff. Just put us somewhere, dude. I don't care. I know that people are going to be tuned in when we're fighting. It's just such a fun fucking fight, dude. And it's just, to me, it's a no-brainer.
That's what I want to touch on. And that's the whole reason why I contacted you, was it is a no-brainer. When I heard you guys talking about this, because we talked to Adrian last week or the week before, and you're right, he's one of the coolest guys out there. He's a very nice kid. You guys are very similar in your personalities. We almost gave him the nickname Mantequilla. We're on the edge of giving him that nickname. But everything about the matchup made sense. And the first thing you do is you think about, what did this guy's last fight look like? What did his last? And you just think of those fireworks coming together. So my question to you is, you guys have had about a week of putting this out there. Has the UFC said anything? Because you're right, it is an absolute no-brainer. What have they told you?
I mean, I don't communicate directly with the UFC, and I don't think Adrian does either. I know Adrian has a great manager as well in what I believe is Iridium Sports, and they do a great job. I have Joe Lozon managing me, and he does a fantastic job with me. I don't do any of that stuff when contacting the UFC or this, that, the other thing. I know I told Joe Lozon, and Joe Lozon texted the UFC, and we asked for that fight. I'm pretty sure that Adrian Yanez did the same thing. I don't have any change in status. The only thing that's changed is we kind of picked up more traction on Twitter and all that stuff. But yeah, dude, I haven't heard anything from the UFC. I think we're being that what are they, the squeaky wheel gets the oil or whatever it is. I think we're doing that. So I think that, you know, it's only a matter of time till they see it. I worked out with the Schmo the other day, did an interview with the Schmo. I also campaigned for it on his interview. So it's out there, dude, and it's up to the UFC to see what they're going to do. I can see why they wouldn't book the fight with two prospects going and whatever. I can understand that for sure. But on the other side, I can see it as, hey, why not make these guys fight? We're going to put it in front of some fans. We can sell some tickets. We can put some butts in seats. And we know these two guys are going to go out there and fight. We know that Randy Costa fights, he's going to go out there balls to the wall. We know Adrian Yanez fights, he's going to go balls to the wall. And if we have both guys fighting each other, dude, that's a banger of a fight. Yeah, dude, we'll see what happens. I've only had three fights in the UFC, so I'm not really in any position to like fucking call on Dana White and ask him for this fight. Neither is he. So if they want to make that fight, that's great. I'm down. I think it's going to be a lot of fucking fun. But until then, I'm going to keep stirring the pot on Twitter.
Man, you may not be in that position, but we certainly are, and so are the fans. So and everybody's fired up.
Help us get this fight.
Well, you know, in the history of our show, we've had a lot of fights happen this way, where somebody's come on the show and said, "I'd like to fight this guy," and literally within a day, I think it's happened. So that's my goal, is by Friday, that's the deadline, I want to see this fight get signed. But once all that happens, what's your prediction for the fight? How do you see it actually playing out?
I wouldn't want to fight the guy if I didn't think I would win, right? So I definitely think I would win. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try to knock him out, and I'm sure he's going to do the same. I don't have any ill will towards Adrian Yanez. I like Adrian Yanez. I like what he's about. I like his story. I like how he fights. I just want to compete against him. I want to go out there and I want to compete against him. I think I'm too tricky, too lengthy, and I can hit too hard for him. And I'm sure he could say his counters are too good, his movements are too good, and he's too fast for me. Fucking great, dude. Let's fight and let's see. I know we can put on a good fight. My prediction for that fight would be like somebody getting knocked out at some point during the fight. That fight's not going to the fucking decision. That's probably the inevitable. Yeah, dude, I don't really have any prediction. I'm not one to come on here and shit talk. I'm not, you know, dogging Adrian Yanez about his skill or he sucks, right? Because he's fucking good. And that's why I want to fight him. So I don't have any predictions where I'm going to talk shit. I wish I could give you guys more, but I just don't dislike the kid. So I'm sorry.
All right. Allow me to add one last wrinkle into all this thing. Because you guys like each other. You know, like you said, you're not going to talk that much smack because you guys actually respect each other and like each other. But if the UFC can't see the physics here and how this is going to be a good fight, maybe we should add something to the wrinkle. And I'm thinking, I think there's got to be a side bet.
There you win. Side bet, dude.
Is it he can't drink Dr. Pepper for a year and then you got to drop something?
Even fucking better.
What is it?
The loser buys the winner a month's supply of whatever. So if Adrian buys me a month's supply of Reese's. If Adrian beats me, I buy him a month's supply of Dr. Pepper. It's a fucking no-brainer. We both win. We're both getting, you know, more exposure for Reese's and Dr. Pepper. Both more exposure for ourselves. A fucking sick fight, dude. I mean, what am I missing here? What am I missing?
I like it. I'm sold. I hope it happens. You said you can make weight in 3 weeks. Hopefully he can. He can't be too far out of shape. And it's in his hometown. Usually fighters like to fight in their hometown, especially when they're young. It can be a little bit of a pressure cooker, but that's what life's all about, right? Rising up to the occasion.
Fighting the UFC, I was gifted with the opportunity to fight my hometown arena. I know how fucking awesome it is. I know what it's like. And I'm not even like trying to do this so he can get that. I'm like, dude, we haven't fought in front of fans in over a year. This is like the first real big banging card. Like fucking Nate Diaz is fighting. Like, dude, that's fucking sick. Like, let's get on that show. Let's try to get it done. Personally, I don't have a preference where the fight is. But given the timeline ties to the Houston with Adrian and all this, that, and that's what he wants. And all right, dude, I'll go and fight you at your own home place. I want to get booed. I want the fans to tell me I suck when I'm walking out and, you know, they're going to get your ass kicked. Like, dude, like, yeah, let's go. Let's see how it's going to play out. Yeah, dude. I mean, that's a great day. He just fought. I'm ready to fight. I don't see them putting that fight on in front of an empty crowd. And I'm just biased and hopeful of that, but we'll see what happens. But I think the fight's going to get made eventually. If we don't get matched up this time, it's only a matter of time. Both of our styles, they complement each other so well for such a fun fight.
The Florida card's going to have 15,000 fans 3 weeks before. Perhaps if that goes well, the Houston card will also have no fans, but I think that was the plan going forward. So we'll see. Would you have the balls if you beat Giannis to grab the mic and say, Houston, do we got a problem?
Man, huh? Yeah, dude, fuck, I guess so. But, I mean, I don't know what they do down there, but if someone went to Boston and did that, then they probably have something coming. I'm not sure how they get down in Houston, but I should probably keep my mouth shut.
Randy, it was great to catch up with you. We really hope the fight comes to fruition. We're glad to hear you're healthy, and we're going to try our best to nudge the UFC with a nice recap here, pushing this angle. You versus Adrian Yanez, UFC 262. I ain't got a problem with that. That's a great fight right there.
I think so, too. So we just need the guys upstairs to give us that approval and send us the piece of paper, because I don't want to fight him for free, and that's stupid. So hopefully we can get paid.
There you go. All right, man. Thanks for the time today.
All right, guys. Later.
Later. All right, folks, there you have it. UFC bantamweight Randy Costa pushing the angle. I like it, Goes. When fighters take control of their career and do stuff like that, I'm telling you, you can go far in the sport.
Mm-hmm. No, he's a good book. I mean, I like both guys. I think the matchup makes sense. It's going to be fun. And the fact that it's in his hometown, I think, kind of sells you a little bit. I mean, I don't know. Isn't the UFC always talking about fighters not wanting to fight, not wanting to take a short notice fight? I mean, these are two guys that seem like they're completely in it. They're doing all your work for you. Just make the fight.
Agreed. All right. Let's get back to some of the news that took place this past week. I got a few more fight bookings. We'll do that, and then we'll touch on some of the latest rumors and other news nuggets. You were going to say something?
Well, yeah, I was going to say you had the perfect chance. He showed his rescue. Why didn't you show the bulldog that you guys rescued in the background? That would have been a good angle. I mean,
there he is. We put him to sleep. We're not having an exciting enough show. He's already asleep. All right. Well, how about Ciryl Gane versus Alexander Volkov?
Makes sense.
Well, I don't know that we said this long enough, but I wanted you to react to it. Kevin Holland getting a shot. Did that surprise you? I mean, he had a disappointing fight against Derek Brunson, but it was on the heels of a 5-0 run in 210 days, which means in 7 months, that guy fought five times and he got the finish over Jacare Souza. He was either Fighter of the Year or in the running for Fighter of the Year on many publications this past year. So I think the UFC, you can't say rewarded him. They gave him a second chance when it came to that next level of being contender. He steps up on short notice. He fights Marvin Vettori. But it's pretty chancy, you know, because the thing with Derek Brunson just kind of like really, really pissed a lot of people off.
Mm-hmm. But this is probably the only way you would see him in that position ever again. It's a good way of being able to just erase what just happened there with Derek Brunson. And I think the UFC's hands were tied a little bit. Marvin Vettori has been absolutely snake bitten since in his run in the UFC. This just keeps happening to him. He's such a good guy. And he's such a good fighter that I think they probably wanted to reward him, make sure he stays on the card. And it made sense. The only thing that didn't make sense was, yeah, you know, Holland had that kind of crappy performance that a lot of people didn't like. It didn't really sit well with even the big boss, but hey man, I mean, now's his chance for redemption. And the thing about Marvin Vettori is he doesn't really give you the opportunity to fight that way. So it's like, even if he wanted to do something like that again, there's no way it would happen because Marvin just puts so much pressure on you. I think that's going to be a really good fight. And hopefully we get back to not having this hate for Kevin Holland, because up until that moment, man, he's given us some pretty fun fights.
Well, he's definitely a fun fighter in the sense that he talks during the fights. He's laughing. I guess I never came to hate him for sure. I didn't like his performance because I felt like he did so much. And yet it was a 5-round fight every time the round ended, even though he was on his back and he wasn't doing much to get up and he was laughing and talking. I felt like every time he got up, he was back on his feet, and now he had a chance to possibly hurt Holland. Because remember, he hurt him early, and so he had a chance to atone for what had happened in round two and round three when the fight was starting to go the route of Derek Brunson. And he didn't, and to me, what it seemed like was he didn't have an answer for Brunson, you know, finding that extra gear, digging deep, having resolve, you know, going back to his wrestling roots and his ground and pound, and he didn't have an answer. And I felt like he tried to hide that, disguise it by, I guess, talking and clowning and goofing, you know, and that's just not something you do in a position like that. What you do is what Derek Brunson did when you were jacking him up, and that's find a plan B, dig deep, figure it out, out-tough him, try something new, you know. Holland, I mean, let's not forget, man, Holland submitted. Oh, sorry. Yeah, wait. No, he knocked. Yes, he submitted Jacare Souza. Holy cow, what did he do? Did he submit him or not? I forgot.
Well, he hurt him really bad, didn't he? And then
I remember he punched him from down when he was on his back.
Yeah, it was in that weird angle.
Yeah.
In you talking right now, somebody in our chat, Chili Billy, he's taking Holland, and I think Vittori's got this one. So we got Chipotle on the line. I love me.
Totally. Hang on a sec. I got to know the answer to this because I literally just spaced it on how he beat him. Do you remember what fight card it was?
No.
It was at the end of the year. And, of course, it wasn't a – here, I'll look it up this way. Kevin Holland.
All right.
Hunt was I remember he was on the bottom and he punched him and he hurt him. He won via knockout. He won via knockout. You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of Anthony Hernandez submitting. He just recently got a submission over a high-level Brazilian as well.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I was even considering
all these fights, they just pile up, and I'm telling you, if I have a weekend of March Madness or I have a weekend of soccer and I have to reprogram and compartmentalize my names and, you know, and I'm talking about Marcus Rashford and Mason Greenwood. Folks, there's times where I'm telling Goes, why didn't he shoot? And Goes will go, who? And I'm like, number 11. I can't even remember Mason Greenwood's name because when you jump from sport to sport, it's really, really tough. I'm just starting to get used to Andre Drummond joining the Lakers, you know, and then watching March Madness this past weekend. You know I'm going to get to Gonzaga and UCLA. But, yeah, Kevin Holland was very comfortable on the ground with Jacare Souza. And my point was with Derek Brunson, I feel like he was laying there and almost saying, I don't have an answer to what you're doing. And I feel like he does have an answer. He's a black belt. He just wasn't trying. And that was the problem that I had mostly with his effort was there. He wasn't trying. And I think he thought that he was putting the onus on Brunson for replicating what some would say is a boring game plan, but it was effective. And that's what Brunson had to do because Brunson was acknowledging, hey, you tattooed me in the first round. I can't take a chance with that. So therefore, I'm going to put you on your ass because you can't seem to answer that. You don't have an answer to it. And guess what? When the fight's over, we all move on. And I'm going to take my 4-5 win streak, which is what Derek Brunson has now, and I'm going to continue. You know, I just took care of Shabazian, shut him down. Now I just shut down Holland. Next. You know what I mean? And Holland can say what he wants, but you can only say it a couple times. Hey, in 2020, I went 5-0 in 210 days. What's up? You know, you can only say that a few times because the sport is merciless, and it's what have you done for me lately? So Holland has a chance to right the ship against Marvin Vettori, and I'm glad that he took the chance to fight him on short notice, and hopefully it works out. But win or lose, just give the proper effort, Kevin Holland, and you'll always be in the good graces with fans, media, and even the UFC. He's proven himself. He's a good, good fighter.
Yeah, this is one of those situations, like you said, where you can use what have you done for me lately to your advantage. You can right the ship here. You don't even have to win. You just have to fight different. You know, because there were a lot of fans that had money on that fight that were probably sitting there pulling their hair out going, man, how can I have all this money on this guy? And he looks like he just doesn't want to be there. This is like a joke to him. That probably pissed off a lot of people. So he has the opportunity. Huh?
You just said it perfectly. It seemed like it was a joke to him, but the rest of us were taking it serious. I'm revealing myself as someone who bet on him that night.
Yeah, and so he has – that's the thing is win, lose, or draw, he has the opportunity to right the ship. Marvin Vettori, he can do a lot of things that Derek Brunson did, but I don't think he will. I think it's going to be a banger. I think they're going to go at each other. So I think it's going to be fun. And I think that's where it comes in where what has Kevin Holland done since that fight? You know, was he eating cheeseburgers? Was he relaxing? I don't know. Marvin Vettori has had his head in the game. So I think that might actually play a factor here. But early on, I think I got Marvin Vettori in that fight.
So Gally from Toronto is a double dipper. He texts you during the show too. I thought he was my personal conciliator. He's over there working for you too, for your crew.
Yeah, he shows up every now and again.
This guy's like Polly Walnuts. He's with the Sopranos, but then he's over there telling secrets to Johnny Sack and the New York gang. All right, but
he hasn't told me anything today.
Huh?
He hasn't said anything today.
You just brought him up a second ago, Gally from Toronto.
No, Chili Billy.
Oh, you brought up Chili. Chili, Gally. All right. I was in. Yeah. All right. I'm dumb. See this gray hair? I'm getting old. What do you want from me? All right. Cyril Gane versus Alexander Volkov. Here's what that did. It basically told us neither one of them is going to face Derek Lewis. What does that do? It basically tells us either Lewis or Jones is going to face Ngannou, unless Miocic has already called and said, I want to get my title back. Get me in the mix somehow, whether it's against Ngannou, which, to be fair, they're 1-1. He is the greatest of all time. He may have that kind of juice. Or if you're going to give Jones to Ngannou, because I get it, that fight's big, then give me Lewis. I don't know. But when you start running out of pieces, you start to wonder what could be next. What do you think is happening right now with Jones and the UFC and the pieces of the puzzle that remain?
To me, it's almost like a guy and a girl, a couple, they're taking a break and they're just taking little shots at each other. You know, like the guy's on Instagram going, hey, I'm over here getting a burger, but it's kind of close to the ex-girlfriend's apartment complex. I think they're just kind of games that are going on like that, but it's telling you a lot. I think if you look at the past and the way Stipe Miocic has conducted his career, something tells me he probably doesn't want to get right back in there. I think he probably wants to chill, be the family guy, figure this out, because that last performance was not a very good performance. The same way Francis Ngannou had to learn from his and go back and sharpen some tools, I think Stipe might have to do that for the first time in a while. So I don't see him really wanting to get right back in there. I think the UFC is basically dangling these things in front of John Jones, telling him, hey, man, we got options. You don't got options. I think that's what's happening. And I think it's very, very obvious, and I think it's very, very public.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a fight in June, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have all the fight nights memorized, but I know Gane versus Volkov and the Korean Zombie versus Ige headline upcoming fight nights. Leslie Smith's taking on Chris Cyborg. I'm not going to poo-poo on that fight because I've seen it before, and I don't – they just don't have very many options, but Smith is popular. She was game to fight her the first time. I believe it happened in Curitiba, Brazil. So she was the away team on a card that featured a lot of shootbox-based fighters or fighters that had origins in shootbox. So including Miocic versus Werdum. That's when he beat him and took the title. So maybe a solid was owed to her, but not by, because that was under the UFC banner, so maybe just under Karma in general. So she gets a second crack at Chris Cyborg. We also have RDA saying, hey, I'll fight Gaethje, send over the contract. Now, what does that do? Well, Islam Makhachev, I think a lot of people were really, really big on him, and they were talking about Islam Makhachev versus RDA. RDA said, yeah, I'll fight you as long as I get Khabib next, when Khabib hadn't really officially retired in everyone's eyes but the UFC. Or I should say the reverse of that. Basically, everybody accepted his retirement except the UFC, but because he was officially still had the C next to his name, I think we all thought he was in play. Well, now that he's retired, maybe he felt like fighting Makhachev doesn't make sense for him. He wants Gaethje. And Gaethje, of course, has been saying, yeah, sure, I need to fight someone. Get me in the mix. So I like it, but it kind of freezes out Makhachev, and I thought Makhachev could definitely, definitely build off that last win he just had.
I think I tweeted this yesterday or the day before, but RDA is just like, he's the guy you want working under you. Like, he's a company guy. I mean, who even stand? If you look at the line for Justin Gaethje, it's not a long line. There's nobody in that line. Nobody wants to fight that guy. RDA is the guy that always steps up and wants, he'll fight anybody, anytime, anyplace. So I admire him for that. And I think, stylistically, it is a fun fight. It's a really fun fight. So I'm all about that fight. I love it.
How about this, dude? What's your reaction to Alex Volkanovski versus Ortega? Coaching tough.
I hate it.
Does that mean we got to wait for them for the season to end and then they fight?
I think so. I think a lot of it might have had to do with the run of COVID that Volkanovski had. Apparently, he tweeted about it yesterday or the day before. Yeah, he said it was a rough one. Oh. So it was a really rough one. So it could have to do with that. But see, the thing about tough, like part of the excitement that comes from tough is the heat. Usually the coaches have some sort of heat between them. And I just don't see those guys getting nasty to each other. I mean, you saw when Volkanovski fell out of the fight how respectful Brian Ortega was with all that. And it's not that you can't get that out of Volkanovski and that you can't get it out of Brian Ortega, because we saw Brian Ortega and the way he reacted with Korean Zombie and all that stuff. Like, he's got it in him. It's just they don't have it for each other. And I kind of think of, for me, Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum, they just were not fun on that show. They didn't really have that type of heat. They were just kind of placeholders. this kind of has that feel a little bit to it. And I don't know if that's the matchup you want to bring back when you're bringing back the tough series.
Yeah. Well, if he had a rough bout with COVID, then I have no problem with it. I mean, if he thinks that he's going to need 6 months to fully recover, you know, by that I mean fully recover and then get a proper camp. All right. But yeah, that it's the delay in the fight. You know, so many of these athletes are able to kind of run it pretty quick from the time they have to pull out. Hamzat Shamayev has kind of been a lone wolf in that regard. Obviously, wish them all the best. But the second part was exactly what you said. It just didn't seem like names that would really, really pop, you know, on a whole season of tough. You want Covington versus Masvidal. You want Dillashaw versus Faber. You just want two coaches that are well-known that can also lift the show if the show needs lifting. You know, sometimes the show will have somebody that's a grenade that can blow up at any time and cause drama. You know, all it takes is one, man, and one can upset 16 pretty good. We've seen it with, you know, Junie Browning did it 1 year, and I just want to fight, bro. What was his name again?
Julian Lane,
yeah. There's a couple of them characters that can really, really bring it. If you have one, then sometimes the coaches doesn't matter. Chris Leben, I guess, was a little bit of that guy, although it was really more Koscheck than Leben. But I'm not even a fan of the show, honestly. I was, but I thought it ran its course. You know, you could still be a good – like Seinfeld was a good show, but the last few seasons, you could tell, like, the laughs were less. They were just pushing certain scripts on you that were kind of, you know, corny or whatever. A lot of shows are like that, and that's why they run its course. So I think this is show season number 30 or 31 or whatever. Enough. You found yourself a gem in Dana White Contender Series. Give us two of those. Give us 10 weeks in the summer and 5 in the winter, and we'll be good. But tough, I don't know about tough. I mean, I thought I was over it, and Ghost introduced me to the challenge on MTV, and I got into it. I don't think you need that. You don't need to do the fighters. Here's another thing. There's at least 3 weight cuts that come with it. You know, they patch them up and throw them out there, the possible concussion protocol. Somebody taking a knockout in the semifinals. It's an exhibition fight. It doesn't even go on your record. Why do you want to get your head stamped, you know? You can only take a few of those in your career. Why do you want to waste it on an exhibition show when you can just wait for Dana White Contender Series, you know, and possibly get in the UFC? If that's your dream to get in the UFC, it just seems like there's a better alternative route than that one.
Yeah, I understand that part of it.
Yeah. All right, I think I got to all the fight bookings. Let me hit refresh real quick on MMA Junkie. Just make sure there's not a bombshell that just dropped. And encourage everybody to get our free app that's available on all tablets and mobile phones, because we're always putting new news out there. We have a great team that hustles 24/7, a worldwide team. And there's, you don't know how many times there's constant stories where as soon as the show ends, we're like, oh, man, this literally just dropped. Thiago Santos was telling Alexander Radkic, hey, man, what's your problem? He actually said it really, really nice. Like, what's your problem? You're calling me an easy fight. And then he provided the numbers to back up how he had outstruck him. So he couldn't have been that easy of a fight. Who knows if they'll make those two fight again. I was really looking forward to a banger there, and it certainly was not that. But Thiago Santos is, you know, when you build up equity like he has and given us great fights, every once in a while, you know, you're going to have some that are a little bit slower than others. But I've always been a big Thiago Santos fan. Also, the thrill and agony piece that the UFC does after their big pay-per-views, that's out. And you can see a lot of the behind the scenes of the Vicente Luque and Tyron Woodley fight, as well as the Francis Ngannou and Stipe Miocic fight. Check it out. You'll really, really like it. And go to buddy Eric Nixon featured in that. So it's pretty cool to see some of his immediate reactions post, you know, the knockout over Miocic that made Ngannou his first UFC champion as a head coach.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun one. I saw that.
Yeah. Amanda Ribas versus Angela Hill. Angela Hill fights every month, so that's no shocker. And I think we got all of the other ones out there already. So let's get on out of here. I want to thank Randy Costa for his time. He sounds like he's ready to go versus Adrian Yanez, UFC 262, May 15th in Houston, Texas. Man, UFC, when the fighters do all the work for you, you should really take a look. You know, that'd be a really, really good one there. Both fighters are very, very exciting. Today, we got spinning backlick and lots of interviews that we'd like you to check out in full, because a lot of times you'll see the video highlights on MMA Junkie. They accompany the recaps that the writers do, but you can get the whole interviews that Goz and I do over at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. So that's those are the interviews that we do outside of our show. This show right here on Sportscaster, you can catch noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific live every Monday and Thursday. And our watch-alongs, which are our fight companions, I guess, on the nights of the UFC pay-per-views. We usually catch most of those here with you guys on sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. Hopefully soon we can start promoting UFC 261 on April 24th. That's hopefully the plan, but we always like to make sure our partners are on board for it. So as soon as we know, we will give you guys the official word. Thank you so much for your support here. As always, we're going to bounce on out of here. Enjoy your Mondays. Go out there and be a champion.